do tonight, I would say that this issue of abortion in the case of Tay-Sachs is one of the cause celebs of modern-day Psak. And this has generated, I know, Baruch Hashem, it's a very rare condition, but has generated intense halachic debate and among the giants of Psak Halacha. First of all, the facts are like this. Tay-Sachs is a very debilitating disease which strikes approximately 1 out of 900 or Ashkenazic, primarily Eastern European couples. When two spouses who are both carriers of the disease get together, which happens about 900 times, then the children have a 25% chance of contracting the disease. In other words, well, 1 in 4 chance. If they contract this disease, it's really a genetic disorder, then certain death ensues by age 3 or 4, and before that, starting from about the age of 6 months, the child undergoes terrible, terrible pain and anguish and difficulty breathing, etc., etc. And needless to say, there's a great amount of stress involved all around in such cases. In 1975, there was a test which was able to determine Tay-Sachs in a fetus, but not before the end of the first trimester. Now, this is important to realize, because the earlier one determines the condition, the more kulos, the more lenient we are in the approach towards abortion. But in this case, specifically in 1975, and the technology is constantly changing, I was told last night that it could be that in a few years, in fact, they will be able to discover Tay-Sachs much earlier than that. But with the technology which was present at that time, and I believe still to this very day, it can only be discovered after 3 months. Now, this leads us to great difficulties, because any heter we've seen for abortion until now was given either within the first 40 days or, in the most extreme cases, within the first trimester. The question is, could abortion be performed in the cases where Tay-Sachs was found to be present after the end of the first trimester? Those are the facts. That's the question on the table. Is that clear? Okay. So the question was asked first to the Tzitz Eliezer, that's Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Eliezer Waldenberg, a posek in Yerushalayim, very, very distinguished posek, by the general director of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital in Yerushalayim. And the Tzitz Eliezer responded. And I'm going to go through with you tonight the Tzitz Eliezer's response, Reb Moshe Feinstein's rejoinder, and the Tzitz Eliezer's rebuttal. And then we will come subsequently to what Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach holds. And you can see that all, of course, outlined on the board. And I'm going to follow the numbers. There are 27 numbers, which we have in total. I'm going to follow them, and you can follow along. Some of them I'll read inside, some of them not. Point number one. The Tzitz Eliezer, before he goes into the logic, says that his ruling is that up till the 7th month, in other words, the end of the second trimester, an abortion may be performed in cases of Tay-Sachs disease. And he says that the logic for that is that until that time, the child is not fully formed or viable outside the womb, and therefore there is not the same degree of severity of taking the child's life, the fetus's life, till that point, as it will be after the fetus is fully formed and capable of existing outside the womb. And then he goes on to basis. The basis, he says, is A, we find that there is no specific ban on killing fetuses which is connected to the ban on murder. We find it's forbidden to kill a fetus for no reason, right? Even where there are certain reasons, but they're not good reasons and not good enough reasons, it's forbidden for reasons which we'll see in a few moments. But it's not forbidden because of murder. It's not considered to be murder in halacha, except according to the one opinion which the Tzitz Eliezer found, the opinion of the Maharam Shik, a 19th century posek in Hungary. Everybody else holds that abortion is not tantamount to murder. It's forbidden for other reasons. That's point number one, which he brings down. And he bases this on several sources, especially, remember this name, the Maharit. Rabbi Yosef Detrani, who was a posek who lived, I think, in northern Africa, if I'm not mistaken, in the mid-1500s. Remember that name. What? Rabbi Yosef Detrani, Maharit, Mem He Reish Yud Tet. Okay? He also brings down that Rabbi Yaakov Emden allows abortions even to avoid pain. In other words, most cases in the literature deal with abortions where there was a question of saving a life, or a question perhaps of Mamzerus, that there was some illegitimate child who, you know, would have all sorts of halachic problems later in life due to his questionable status or such like. Rabbi Yaakov Emden came up and said, you know what? It's possible to allow abortion even where the mother is going to undergo pain as a result of the pregnancy. Okay? Important, Rabbi Yaakov Emden. What's more important is the language which Rabbi Yaakov Emden uses. We'll come back to it later on. It'll come back to haunt us. And that is in point three here towards the bottom. He says, and the quotation marks in the third line in the paragraph, there's a quote from Rabbi Yaakov Emden's Druvus. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, by the way, lived in Germany in the beginning of the 18th century. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, "Vigam be'ubar kosher," also in a kosher fetus, by that we mean one where there is no question of mamzerus involved, "Yesh sad lahakel," there is a side to be lenient, "L'tzorach gadol," where it's very necessary, "Kol kamad lahakel," as long as the fetus has not left to begin the labor process to be born. Even though there is no imminent danger to the life of the mother. Ella, we're only doing it to save her from the evil which she, the fetus, causes to her by giving her great pain. Note the language Rabbi Yaakov Emden uses. He uses language Yesh tzad lahokel l'tzorech gadol. There is a side to be lenient for great necessity. Remember that. Emblazon that on your memory. Okay? The next point he makes is that in Rabbi Yaakov Emden and in the Maharit, there is no time limit mentioned. Neither of them, in their response, and by the way, if you want to check it out, they're both, we're not going to do it inside, but they're both printed here on the last page. You have the Maharit and Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and you can check it out for yourself. Neither of them mention any time frame. They just say that where it's necessary, one is allowed to abort a fetus. They don't distinguish between 40 days and after 40 days, between the first, second, or third trimester. They just say it's permissible to abort the fetus. Says the Tzitz Eliezer, from here I learn a very basic principle, that where it's mutter across the board. Why the Tzitz Eliezer then limited his permission till the end of the second trimester is not clear. Perhaps he felt to be safe once the fetus is viable outside the womb, which we believe is at the end of seven, and during the seventh month, it's not worthwhile taking chances with the halacha. Okay? That's probably what his logic is. In any event, a final point which he makes for the moment, we'll come back to him, of course, later on, is that the halacha that one may be mechalel Shabbos, one may desecrate the Shabbos for saving a fetus's life, is not relevant. By that, it may mean it's not indicative, necessarily, of the fact that he's considered to be a complete, whole, and viable human being in the womb. No. It's possible to say that a fetus is not considered to be, as of yet, a full and complete human being, but rather, one is still permitted to desecrate the Shabbos, even though Shabbos is the most severe institution in Judaism. We know you can't desecrate Shabbos in order to save the life of a goy, unless you're afraid that if you don't save his life, he won't save yours. Nonetheless, we can save the life of a fetus by desecrating the Shabbos. Says it's Eliezer, that's not proof that he's considered to be a complete and whole Jew and full human being at the moment. You know why? Because the logic why we desecrate Shabbos is because Chalel Olav Shabbos Achas, desecrate for him now one Shabbos, in order in the future, Yishmo Shabbos is hard, but he'll keep a lot of Shabbosos. So therefore, even something which is not yet fully a human being can be considered to be a potential Shomer Shabbos. And therefore, since it's a potential Shomer Shabbos, a potential entity which will keep Shabbos holy, therefore we desecrate Shabbos for that entity now, even though it's not a fully formed human being, in order that later on it should keep many Shabbosos. And then the Tzitz Eliezer goes on in his tshuva to prove that emotional anguish is tantamount to physical anguish. In other words, just like Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in his responsum, said that there's a tzad l'hokel, there's a possibility to be lenient, where there's a possibility where the mother is undergoing grave physical anguish because of the child, even though she's not in imminent danger of death. The same thing applies to the grave emotional anguish which the parents of such a child will undergo after such a child is born and goes through the inevitable lapse towards death. That's the end of the first Shuvah in the Tzitz Eliezer. Yes.
You're talking about desecrated Shabbos for the fetus, but what about the mother there? It's not only just for the fetus, it's for the mother too.
Yeah, you're right. In most cases when we desecrate Shabbos, we're desecrating Shabbos both for the mother and for the fetus. But there are cases, occasionally, I don't know exactly medically how it would work, where we would just be faced with the question of desecrating Shabbos for the fetus and not for the mother. And that's the type of case which he's speaking about.
There's also a difference. In one case, the situation is where you save...
Yeah. ...desecrating Shabbos for a fetus that is known to have two sex.
That's a good question. The question of desecrating Shabbos for fetus is known to have taste sex, he discusses here. Not where I underline it, but subsequent to that. And he says, theoretically, you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos such a fetus for reasons he doesn't discuss here, but in other places. I assume that that's going to have to deal with how do you define a Shomer Shabbos. It could be a Jewish baby is considered to be a Shomer Shabbos, even though he's not keeping Shabbos intentionally. In other words, that would be a separate issue of what's considered to be Shmiras Shabbos and what is not, as opposed to what's considered to be a Nefesh and what is not. Okay, that would be a separate issue. What? Right now it's not Ba'olam, right. No, but when it comes to the world, even though it's not yet born, a fetus has the potential to be born. I mean, fetuses have certain rights also. You know, you can, in Halacha, under certain cases, a fetus becomes an owner of property. So a fetus is not as if it's completely low ball low. Depends. There's certain parameters.
Say,
yeah.
This is the woman has present pain, which we're saving, which we're.
Which you mean the Shelas Yavetz, the Yaakov Emden, right?
I'm sorry, the Yaakov Emden. Yeah. The woman has present pain, so and we permit the abortion. But in the other case, it's a question of future pain that the woman will have later on.
Right, the Tzitz Eliezer is equating emotional anguish in the future to physical pain in the present. But for some reason, everybody, even Rav Moshe Feinstein, assumed that that equation is viable. Nobody ever said that that's incorrect. Seems like that's considered to be a tzorech gadol. That makes it into a great necessity.
Emotional pain would?
Yes. Emotional pain does mean it is according to
after.
No, even after Rabbi Manoble is making the point that even though the emotional pain is subsequent to the pregnancy, nonetheless we take it into account.
Although there's an emotional pain,
yeah,
right now,
it's but it's right. Knowing what's going to happen, perhaps would we make it into emotional pain in the present as well? That could be it too. Okay, that's the end of Tzitz Eliezer's Tshuva. That was written in 1975 on Hay Kislev, on Chavtes Kislev. If you turn the page to page 2, you will see a tshuva written by Rav Moshe Feinstein in 1977. Sukkot 1977. Actually, it's neither. I'm sorry. Kislev of Tavshin Lamed Vav. Kislev of Tavshin Lamed Hei is 1974. And Sukkot of Tavshin Lamed Zayin is 1976. That's still part of the old year. But in any event, Rav Moshe Feinstein is responding to the Tzitz Eliezer, even though he doesn't quote him by name in the entire tshuva. Rav Moshe Feinstein responds to the Tzitz Eliezer. It's interesting. I was taken aback, you know, after Rav Moshe died, one of the major maspidim in Yerushalayim was the Tzitz Eliezer. which I have never, I tell you, I never read the Hesped, but it's amazing that after Moshe very, very vehemently attacks him here, he'll still maspid him later on. So impressive. In any event, Moshe says here, first of all, he comes and starts from a basic assumption completely diametrically opposed to Moshe. He says the basic assumption is that the Isser of abortion is the Isser of murder. They're one and the same. That's his basic premise. Okay? Premise number one. And he says that that is the pshat in the Tosfos in Sanhedrin, where the Tosfos in Sanhedrin says that there is nothing which is permissible for impermissible for a goy, which is permissible for a Jew. Tosfos means to say that just as a goy is considered to be a murderer if he aborts a fetus, so to a Jew is considered to be a murderer if he aborts a fetus. That's how he learns the pshat and Tosfos in Sanhedrin. That's Reb Moshe's first basic point. Says Reb Moshe, hi, you'll ask me a question. We have a Tosfos in Nida. Tosfos in Nida, we quoted last week when we learned the Tzitz Eliezer the first time. We said that Tzitz Eliezer learned that Tosfos in Nida argues the Tosfos in Sanhedrin. Because Tosfos in Sanhedrin says that a person who aborts a fetus is patur. And patur, we always learn, means that it's forbidden, but you're not liable for capital punishment. Tosfos in Nida used an expression, it's mutter, which means it's permissible. At least in terms of the ban of murder, it's permissible to abort a fetus. There might be other isurim involved, but not the isur of murder. And we said that Tzitz Eliezer learned that it's an argument between the Tosfos. But Tosfos in Nida has a valid viewpoint, and he uses that in order to help build the permissibility of abortions in the cases where he allows it. Says Reb Moshe Feinstein, I know how to deal with the Tosfos in Nida. You know what the pshat in Tosfos in Nida is? It's a mistake. It shouldn't say mutter. It should say pater. It's a mistake in the language of Tosfos. And that's what it says here in point 7. If you look at it inside, you'll see. He says that it's clear that despite the fact that Tosfos uses the language of mutter, that's a printer's error. What it should say in Tosfos is pater. And once you learn that Tosfos says pater in Nida, of course it's exactly the same thing as Tosfos in Sanhedrin. What is exactly the same thing in Tosfos in Sanhedrin? That it's an Isser, according to Moshe's approach, of murder. And since it's an Isser of murder, really, you should be Chayav Misa. It's just that by a Jew, there's certain types of murder for which you're not liable for the death penalty. And we mentioned, of course, one good example of that last week is if you kill somebody who anyway would have died within the next 12 months as a result of a mortal wound, in other words, a trefa, you're not put to death for doing so. The same thing is true, is applicable to abortion. But since we learned that both places in Sanhedrin need to say potter, it means it's forbidden, you don't get the death penalty. That's Reb Moshe's first refutation. Says Reb Moshe, besides that, the Rambam clearly holds that abortion is murder. The same Rambam we quoted last week. And he says, I'll prove it to you again from the Rambam. What does the Rambam say? The Rambam says that if the mother's life is endangered by the fetus, you're allowed to abort the fetus. Why, says the Rambam? Because we apply the principle of, who remembers? Rodef, right. In other words, if somebody is pursuing somebody else in order to kill that person, we have a mitzvah to kill the pursuer. So here too, since the fetus is pursuing the mother with the intent, so to speak, although it's unintentional, but with the purpose of killing the mother, therefore allowed to kill the fetus. Says Reb Moshe, if the Rambam held that a fetus is not called a life in the fullest sense of the word, then the Rambam would not have had to use the logic of Rodef in permitting the abortion of that fetus. From the fact that the Rambam used that logic in permitting the abortion of a fetus, it must be that the Rambam holds that really a fetus is a life. And really, to kill a fetus is a form of murder. And therefore, he had to come on to the external logic to allow it, the logic of Rodef. That's Reb Moshe's second point. Okay? And then he says that no abortions, therefore, are ever permitted, ever, unless the mother's life is in danger. There are no other extenuating circumstances. If you hold that a fetus is a life, and taking that life is a variation of some variation on the theme of murder, there's never any permissibility whatsoever to perform an abortion unless the mother's life is in danger. Okay? Next, Reb Moshe goes on to discuss it a little bit further. He says, how we found a Ma'arit. The Ma'arit says, and you can take it, it's a very short Ma'arit, you can take a look at yourself on the last page, the Ma'arit in Siman Tzadik Tes says explicitly that abortion is permissible in certain cases, such as Mamzerus. I believe that was the case over there. No, I don't see what the logic was there. I don't see offhand what the case was, but in any event, the Ma'arit says that abortion is not considered to be a sin of murder. Says Reb Moshe Feinstein, you know what this Ma'arit is? It's a forgery. It wasn't written by the Ma'arit. And he brings three proofs, two of which I wrote on the board, one of which I'll tell you outside. The first proof he brings is that the Ma'arit's logic is faulty. It's so faulty that it couldn't have been written by the Ma'arit. What's the Ma'arit's logic? He says, one of his proofs, he says that there is a Gemara in Erechin. We mentioned this last week. I'll just mention again in order to remind you. There's a Gemara, for those who weren't here last week. The Gemara in Erechin says that if a woman is pregnant and she commits a crime for which she's liable to capital punishment, say she desecrates the Shabbos in public in front of witnesses who forewarned her, etc., so she's stoned even before she delivers the baby. On the spot, they take her to Beis Din, they judge her to be liable to the death penalty, and they kill her, they don't wait. Says the Gemara, Pshita, isn't it obvious that we kill her right away? And then the Gemara says, no, you might say to wait for so-and-so reason. Says the Ma'arit. The Ma'arit's logic was, how could the Gemara possibly have a question that isn't it obvious that you kill her right away? If abortion is murder of the fetus, then it's not obvious that you kill her right away. You should not perform a murder of a fetus in order to put the mother to death. No, on the contrary, it's not simple at all. I should push off the execution of the mother until such time as the fetus is born, so that I should not be murdering the fetus. Says the Ma'arit, from the fact that the Gemara asked Pshita, and it said, the Gemara is asking, it's obvious that I'm allowed to kill the mother, and that I should kill the mother with the fetus still inside. Says the Ma'arit, it's clear from this that there is no isser of murder in a case where you kill a fetus. Otherwise, you should have had to wait. Says the Ma'arit, finds it, I have no idea what the Ma'arit is talking about. The Gemara says why it was obvious to it that the kid is killed. The Gemara says another word. The Gemara says, Pshita, it's obvious that you kill the child together with the mother, the fetus together with the mother, Gufahu, because it's part of the mother's body. So says Reb Moshe, the Gemara knew that abortion is murder. The Gemara is asking the question because of a different reason. The Gemara is saying, of course you kill the kid, even though abortion is murder, because at the moment, the kid is considered to be part and parcel of the mother. It's, as a matter of fact, says Reb Moshe, that such an obvious reason why the Gemara asks Pshita, despite the fact that in other cases abortion is murder, here it's obvious that we kill her together with her child because it's part and parcel of her body, that the Ma'arit must have thought of such a logic. Since the Ma'arit doesn't write of that logic, it must be that the tshuva is a forgery. Novi, the statue of the Maritz, could have not thought of this obvious explanation of the Gemara, which I'm giving. That's what Rav Moshe says. That's reason number one. Says Rav Moshe, I have another reason to assume that this Truva in the Maritz is a forgery. The other reason is because the Maritz quotes in this Truva a Rashba who quotes a case where the Ramban assisted a non-Jewish woman to perform an abortion upon herself. Rav Unterman, chief rabbi of Israel in the mid-60s, from the 60s till 1972, writes that this Rashba is nowhere to be found. Can't find it anywhere. Rav Moshe seizes upon this. Says, oh, since this Rashba is nowhere to be found, it's clear that the Maritz is a forgery. That he made it. The Rashba brings down a case. The Rashba was a Talmud, a student of the Ramban. And he brings down a case where the Ramban helped to abort a non-Jewish fetus. Says Rav Moshe in the wake of Rav Unterman, this Rashba doesn't exist. Since the Rashba doesn't exist, it's clear that the Truva is a forgery. Here's the third reason which Rav Moshe gives why it's a forgery, which is a little bit too technical for us tonight, but he says that the Truva in Siman Tzadik Tes, which allows abortion, contradicts the Maritz Truva in Siman Tzadik Zayin, in which he seems to disallow abortion. Okay? In any event, those are three complaints against the Maritz, and he says it's clearly a forgery. And he says, you should know, that even, point 12, he says, even if you think that the Truva is legitimate, that it's not a forgery, it's clear to me that the Truva is then talking about a case where the fetus is less than 40 days old. Because we mentioned last week that there's a Gemara Yevamis which says that a fetus less than 40 days old is like it's a basket, a bag of water. It's not considered to be alive. And therefore the Maritz was allowing abortion only in that case where the kid is less than 40 days old. Where the kid is more than 40 days old, the Maritz would never have allowed abortion. Says, I believe that the Truva is a forgery. But even if it's not a forgery, that's pshat in the Truva. Despite the fact that if you look at the Truva itself, the Truva doesn't allude at all to talking about abortion within 40 days. By the way, says Rav Moshe, I myself hold that abortion is forbidden even within the first 40 days. Rav Moshe himself says, I hold it's forbidden. And you know why? Because I found that Ramban holds that you desecrate the Shabbos in order to save the life of a fetus which is less than 40 days old. And Rav Moshe holds, not like the Tzitz Eliezer said before, but rather that the permissibility to desecrate Shabbos is directly connected to the categorization of the child, the fetus, as a life. In other words, Rav Moshe holds that they hinge on each other. Rav Moshe says that if we can be mechalel Shabbos in order to save the child who's less than 40 days old, it's clear that that child is considered to be a nefesh, a halachic soul, and therefore one cannot abort such a fetus. Okay? The Tzitz Eliezer said before, not that way. Tzitz Eliezer says, even though it's not considered a nefesh, there's still a logic to allow chilul Shabbos for this entity, because Chalel loves Shabbos Achas. Kidei Shishmer Shabbos is Harbe. Desecrate when Shabbos in order that the kid should keep a lot of Shabbosos in the future. But Rav Moshe holds no such distinction. If you can be Mechalel Shabbos to save a 40-day-old fetus, it must be that a 40-day-old up to a 40-day-old fetus is considered a life, and therefore you're not allowed to abort a fetus even less than 40 days old. That's Rav Moshe's approach. He says, it's true, we find alternative explanations of the Rambam, who says that, who brings down the logic of Rodef, says on alternative pshatim, we cannot base a heter. We cannot, but not on their basis, we cannot be lenient. Despite the fact that other great sources have learned that despite the fact that the Rambam employs, and we'll see what they say when we get back to the second Sitz Eliezer, but he says despite the fact that other great sources have learned that even though the Rambam employs the logic of Rodef, the Rambam also holds that a fetus is not a nefesh, and he just needed the logic of Rodef in order to overcome some tangential problems. Nonetheless, says R' Moshe, we do not accept alternate pshatim in order, alternate explanations of the Rambam in order to be lenient. Okay, that's what R' Moshe says. And R' Moshe says that even if one holds, again, well, let's take a look at this inside. Point 14. It's on page 8, Tzadik Tes, here in the Tshuva, page 4 in our handout. Kolponim, nonetheless, Mashkos Baal Sweet Age, that which the Sweet Age of Bichil Yaakov Weinberg writes, Sherov Arishonim Chokin El Rambam, that most of the early commentators argue on the Rambam, Shalachain Sover, and therefore the Sweet Age holds, Sharov, that the majority of sources who hold, Lahatia Arigo Suborim Lutzarach, that one can abort fetuses where necessary for the mother, Avshalo Sakona Mamish, even though it's not a clear and present danger for the mother, Ain no Klum. It's not true. It's not correct. The Ain no Kane, it's not like this. The Afla Sovrim, that even those who hold, Shumach Matzlo Nechshava Dai Nefesh, that the reason why you can abort a fetus is because it's not a soul. Therefore, Nidchem Ibnei Chilus Aim, its viability is cast aside because of the life of the mother. Nami Sovrim, they also hold to Iser Minatora Midin Ritzicho Laharogu Ubar. It's still forbidden Minatora to kill an Ubar, which is a very interesting premise for Moshe stating. He's stating, till now we are learning that at least if you hold an Ubar, it's not a Nefesh, it's not a Iser Ritzicho. Says the Moshe, not true. Even if the old Uber is not an Efesh, it's still an Isser Ritzicha. It's always murder, anything which has the possibility of life, despite the fact that it's not viable, despite the fact that it's not considered to be an Efesh in terms of halacha, nonetheless has applied to it an Isser of murder if you try to abort it. Then the Moshe goes on to talk about the Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And I got to tell you that everybody agrees that this Rabbi Yaakov Emden's first premise is very difficult. Rabbi Yaakov Emden was asked whether one is allowed to abort the fetus of a fetus which is a mamzer. In other words, the mother, let's say, was a married woman and she had an adulterous relationship with a man other than her husband, and she conceived the child. So when the child is born, the child is going to be a mamzer, right? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden was allowed whether one is allowed to abort the child. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden wants to say it first, yes, of course you're allowed to abort the child. Why? Because what kind of sin is the mother sinning when she's adulterous? A sin for which punishment is meted out? Whatever, whichever one, Sreifa, or Chenek, but capital punishment. Therefore, in halacha, he says, we view the mother as if she's what? Dead. Aye, she's alive and kicking. So what? Halachically, she's dead. Why is she halachically dead? Because if we had a Sanhedrin, which now would rule, adjudicate court cases of capital punishment, they would put her to death. So since they would put her to death, if we had a Sanhedrin, so therefore she's considered ready to be dead, and therefore the fetus within her is also definitely considered to be dead, so therefore you're aborting a dead fetus. Hi, the fetus is alive and viable. Doesn't matter, because halachically it's dead. She herself is halachically dead. So how much more so is her fetus halachically dead? So therefore you're allowed to abort it. What? So, yeah, so Rabbi Yaakov Emden is an extraordinarily difficult thing. You're right. Well, that's where Moshe picks up on. But before I get to that, I want to tell you a very interesting Gemara in Ksuvos. The Gemara in Ksuvos and Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings this down, says that even though we can't give the four capital punishments in our day and age, we can't stone, burn, suffocate, or run people through with a sword, nonetheless, the possibility of these punishments still exists. If somebody's supposed to be stoned so God causes him to fall off a roof, if somebody's supposed to be suffocated, he drowns. If somebody's supposed to be burnt, he either gets burnt or he gets bitten by a snake. If somebody's supposed to be run through by a sword, I think he gets killed by bandits, if I remember correctly. So it says, Rabbi Yaakov, and then, we see from the Gemara in Ksuvos that even though we don't have a Beis Din to mete out the punishments in our day and age, nonetheless, God metes out the punishments. So therefore, it's as if the punishment has been inflicted on her already. It's as if the child is already dead. That's what he says. So Rav Moshe says, what is he talking about? Rav Moshe says, you know, even at the time when the Sanhedrin existed, let's say you had a woman who had witnesses that witnessed her about to be adulterous. And they said to her, and to the guy too, they said, listen, you guys should know that if you do what you're about to do, you're going to be put to death by Beis Din. And they said, in the classic line of the Gemara, Manaskein, we're doing it because we want to be put to death. We want to do it, we're willing to, or whatever they said, love conquers all, we're willing to be put to death in order to do what we want to do. They say they're willing to do it. And they go ahead and they do it. And the witnesses are there. So it looks like an open and shut case. So you come to Beis Din, you come to the Sanhedrin, 20 of the minor Sanhedrin, 23 members, and you start adjudicating it, you start the judgment. Somebody comes in a fit of rage, the jealous husband comes, let's say, to court, and he kills the woman in court, shoots her in the dock. What's the halacha of the husband in that case? He put him to death as well. Why? Because until the actual pronouncement of sentence takes place, it ain't over till it's over. Until that point in time, she's not considered to be in halacha bar katola. She's not considered to have the halachic status of a woman who's due to be executed, a woman who's dead. After the pronouncement of the death sentence, then, in fact, if somebody were to kill the woman, that person would be putter. We wouldn't do anything to him. But prior to pronouncement of the death sentence, anybody who kills this woman is chayev misa, is himself put to death. So how could Rabbi Yaakov Emden paskin that we can kill the kid because the mother is considered halachically dead? She is not. Nobody's considered halachically dead until the actual sentence is pronounced. So therefore, says Rav Moshe, Rabbi Yaakov Emden's tshuva cannot be used. But anyway, he says, even if you wanted to use Rabbi Yaakov Emden's tshuva, listen, what language did Rabbi Yaakov Emden use? He used the language, and that's why I stressed to you before what he says. He says that, let me quote it exactly. Gab ubar kosher yech tzad lehokil etzor gadol. There's a side to be lenient where it's very necessary. Says Rav Moshe, the fact that he expressed himself, there's a side to be lenient, means that most sides are to be stringent. There's one, means like there are five sides. And one side is to be lenient, but there are four sides to be stringent. So even Rabbi Yaakov Emden didn't mean actually la locha, that one can be lenient. It just meant there's a possibility of stating the position that one can be lenient. But not that that should actually be the ruling. Rabbi Yaakov Emden never entertained such a notion. So even if we were to use Rabbi Yaakov Emden's logic, nonetheless it would not be permissible. And therefore, says Rav Moshe, in conclusion he says, that it's impossible to allow abortion in the case of Tay-Sachs. Again, like we said before, it's only possible to allow abortion in a case where the mother's life is in imminent danger. Only in that case. Because the Rambam says that the heter is based on the permissibility to perform an abortion is based on the principle of rodef, that the fetus is considered to be pursuing the mother in order to kill her. That's only true where the mother's life is in danger. And Rav Moshe, I think, if I'm correct, I'm not sure about this, but I think Rav Moshe holds it's only where the mother's life is in danger because of the fetus. But the mother's life is in danger because of some other reason, and the fetus is not causing that or contributing to that directly, so So then it would be a question if one be allowed to abort the fetus in that case.
Like breast cancer.
Like if a woman's dying of cancer, and right, that would be a big shiloh whether that's permitted in that case or not. But Ramosha doesn't address that here. I don't know what he would hold in such a case. In any event, be that as it may, Ramosha is very strange, and he says that God should forgive the Tzitz Eliezer for having written the tshuva which he wrote. Okay? He writes it several times. He writes about Rabbi Yaakov Emden as well. But he writes that about the Tzitz Eliezer in his final line, that one cannot rely on this tshuva at all. That's what Ramosha says. By the way, along the way, just for, Rav Moshe attacks the Ben Ish Chai, famous Sephardi Posek, the Rav Palim, who was one of the basic Sephardi Posek, and he says he didn't know what he was talking about. And the Tzitz Eliezer takes umbrage at that. Even though Tzitz Eliezer is not a Sephardi, he says, how could he say about the Rav Palim, one of the great Sephardi Posek, he didn't know what he was talking about? All right, but that's a little bit off on the side. I didn't want to get into that. Now let's go back to what the Tzitz Eliezer responds to Rav Moshe. Tzitz Eliezer says, first of all, in the first point he says, Reb Moshe's premise that the Tosfos Sanhedrin, which says that since a goy is forbidden to perform abortions, so too a Jew is forbidden to perform abortions, it's just that a Jew is not put to death, is not necessarily indicative of an Isser of Ritzicha. No. You know what I'll tell you? I'll tell you, says Tzitz Eliezer, and he brings every point he says, he brings corroboration for, from others for him other than himself. He says, you know what I'll tell you? That what the Gemara, the Tosfos Sanhedrin meant is that we have a principle. There's nothing which is permissible for, which is impermissible for a goy, which is permissible for a Jew. That in and of itself might be the isser of abortion by a Jew. By a goy, in fact, the prohibition is a prohibition of murder. But by a Jew, the prohibition is the fact that we can't be allowed to do something which they're not allowed to do. So, I mean, it's not an issur of murder. It's an issur of don't do things which goyim are not allowed to do as well. And that's a totally different type of issur. It's an issur which is not based on the murder aspect, but it's based on the fact that there can't be anything which they're not allowed to do, which we are allowed to do. That's his first approach to the Tosfos Sanhedrin. Yeah.
How about
divorce? Which claim can't get a divorce? Of course, sure they can get a divorce. Just because their church says they can't get a divorce, they can't get a divorce. It's not our fault that their church is wrong. An issur which, an issur which the Torah dictates to goyim. In other words, the Torah dictates to goyim that they're not allowed to perform abortions. Not an issur which they generate for themselves. Okay, so that's his first point. His next point is that nobody in history ever said that there's a mistake in Tosfos and Nidan that it should have said putter instead of mutter. Says, true, there are achronim, among which, ironically enough, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who say that Tosfos' language is not 100% accurate. But nobody was ever audacious enough to come along and change Tosfos' language to say that when Tosfos says potter mutter, he means potter. I'm sorry, not that he means, but that it's a mistake, and that it should have said potter. And he brings down a slew of achronim who learned that Tosfos' Sanhedrin meant literally that abortion is permissible from the perspective of murder. Those achronim learned that abortion is not permissible. It's forbidden because of one of several reasons. Either it's forbidden because one is not allowed to inflict the wounds or unnecessary, which is the issur of chabalah, the issur of inflicting wounds where there is no positive result. Or it's forbidden because of theft. Either theft from the father and the mother, who are the owners of the child, or theft from the child itself, who has the right to have life. Or they learn that if nothing else, there might be an issur here of hashchasa zera, of wasting the seed, the sperm of the father, which impregnated the egg of the mother. But all of them learn that although abortion is impermissible, it's not even according to Tosfos and Nida, it's not impermissible because of murder. It's mutter from the perspective of murder. It's usur from other perspectives. So therefore, he says, it's clear that all these people, when they learn Tosfos, and he brings down the Beis Shlomo and the Tzofnas Paneach and the Toras Chesed and the Achiezer, all these Achronim all learn Tosfos according to the simple pshat in Tosfos that it's permissible from the perspective of Ratzicha to kill a fetus. Then he says, let's address the Rambam. He says, we have many interpreters of the Rambam. I really, before we go into the Rambam, I just want to really, we should just look inside at the language which he uses. Very strong language. If you take a look at page 6, at point 19, he says, just with all his language, with all due respect, lo adoni, no sir, lo zu aderech, that is not the approach. V'chaim anu, and we live, apid das gedoni adoros, on the opinions of the giants of the generations. V'heima torchul kol echod v'echod, and they toiled, each and every one, l'fid darko, based on their own approaches, levire to explain ulahamid, and sustain. Kavonas divrei ha-Tosfos, the intent of the words of Tosfos, benida, in nida, uliyashvam, and to resolve them. Vaf echod meyem, and not one of them, lo'ol al daito, thought of haderecha kalav apshuta b'yoser, the most simple and easy way, lomar, to say sheyesh tov sofrim b'divrei ha-Tosfos, that there's a mistake in Tosfos, uv'mako mutter, that instead of mutter, tzorech lios osur. Okay? Nobody ever said that? All right, but let's go on to the next point. Now, the next point, which is point 20 in here, is that the Rambam, according to Reb Moshe, clearly indicates an issur of ritzicha. The Rambam clearly indicates that it's an issur of murder. Because otherwise, why did the Rambam have to resort to the logic of Rodev to allow abortion? Let him just say abortion is permissible because the child in the womb is not considered to be a nefesh. So says the Tzitz Eliezer in point 20, Vani Tamei, and I'm astounded. Haflava fella, wondrously and more wondrously. Eich Sheheli Mesatzmo, how he ignored, or Lo Shasalibo, or didn't pay attention, El Adiria Poskim, to the giant Poskim. Mikama of Dorosha Kimuna, from several generations which preceded us. Some of them were close even to the period of the Rishonim. She'abiru d'lokein, who didn't explain this way. Elabi fuchel shodover, the exact opposite, that the Rambam of course holds that there is no halacha of nefesh for a fetus. How did he see the sma, which is one of the commentators printed on the page of the Shulchan Aruch? B'chosh mishpatim tov chav heisiv kovakotin ches. Shemivar b'kavonas divya Rambam, who explains the logic of the Rambam, v'shulchan aruch sham, and the Shulchan Aruch there, the zeu shehu tzorach lichtov, that is that which he had to, the zeu shehu tzorach lichtov, that which he had to write. Shelachein mishahotzi rosho ein nogimbo, that which we don't touch, the child, the fetus, the moment the head crowned and came out of the womb of the mother, she'ein dochi nefesh v'nei nefesh, because we don't push off one life because of another life, even though the mother's in danger. V'zel tivo sholem, because that's the nature of the world. V'kidei, the reason why the Rambam wrote this, that's the nature of the world. Shelo tomar, that you shouldn't say that when the child is being born, still areu kirodev, he's still considered to be a rodev. V'yatzilu simo b'nafsho, and they could save the mother's life by killing the fetus. Kamash melo, and that's what the Rambam came to tell us. Came at Sheteva Olam Bekach, since this is the nature of the world, ain't in Rodei for love. He doesn't have the loch of a pursuer. Vafo Bichain, nonetheless, but Odo Bimiel, while he's still within the womb, Muto Lechadcho, you can cut him up. Avo Bishucha, even though he's alive, Shekol Shelo Yotzalavir Olam, ain't Shem Nevesh Olav, because as long as he didn't leave and come into the air of the world, he's not going to be a Nefesh. For Araya, and proof to that, is danogif ishahara, somebody who hits a woman who's pregnant. V'yotzi yodeh, and the children are miscarried, umesu, and they die, mishalim pays the mev lodos, the value of the fetuses, v'ein shem roteach umisalav, and he's not considered to be a murderer, nor somebody who's liable to the death penalty. So says the Tzitzel, I understand Rav Moshe. The Sma, and the Sma is not the only one. He brings down a whole slew of Achronim here who say that the Rambam brought down the logic of Rode for other reasons. The Sma says he brought it down in order to emphasize why, when the child is in the process of being born, we no longer call him a Rodef. And we do not allow a doctor to kill a child who's being born in order to save the mother. Because that's the nature of the world. Children are born that way. So it's not their fault that the mother's in danger because of their birth. So we see here clearly that the Rambam holds, according to the Sma, the Rambam holds, of course, the fetus is not a nefesh. Why did because the pasuk says, if you kill, cause a woman to miscarry, you don't have to be put to death. Why, however, does the Rambam bring down logic of Rodef in order to tell us that don't think that Rodef applies to the actual labor and birthing process. Only beforehand could it be considered a Rodef, but not at that point in time, because that's nature. That's where the birthing process occurs. And he says, listen, one of the most astute commentators on the Rambam was the Radbaz. It was also a Rav in Egypt a few hundred years after the Rambam. And he himself says explicitly, the Radbaz, that the child, the fetus in the mother's womb is not considered to be a nefesh. And he says we find several other alternate pshatim in the Rambam. One of the alternate pshatim in the Rambam is that the reason why the Rambam brought down the halach of Rodef is in order to explain why we give the kid such a gruesome death. It says that we cut up the fetus in the mother's womb. It says, if not for him being a Rodef, I might have thought that you can't do something so gruesome and so horrible. All you can do is give her some sort of drug to drink, which might cause the fetus to come out, flush it out. But you can't cut it up. And this is one of the pshatim given in why the Rambam uses the language he uses of Rodef. And many later, that was point 22. And before that, the Tzitz Eliezer brings down that there's the opinion of many Achronim, including the Noida B'Yehuda and Reb Chaim Oizer, great Achronim, that the reason why the Rambam brought down the halacha of Rodef is to tell us that even where she's already in labor, as long as the baby's head is not crowned, it's not out of the womb yet, you can kill the child. That's when the Rambam needs the halacha of Rodef. In other words, prior to the actual labor, of course you can kill the fetus because it's not yet a nefesh. During the process of labor, I might say you can't kill the child because it's now considered to be a nefesh, because it's about to be born and therefore it's clearly now viable. And that the Rambam says, no, you can still kill the child. Why? Because that has the status of Rodef. When is the last time you cannot kill the child? When is the time in which you cannot finally not kill the child any longer? That's only the point where the child's head is actually out, because that's the nature of the world. Now, of course, there are explanations of Rambam, including Reb Moshe stresses Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's pshat, which learns the Rambam like Reb Moshe, that a child that's going to feed is considered to be a nefesh, and therefore you need a special heter rodef. And Reb Moshe goes so far as to say that Reb Chaim had all the other sources seen the Reb Chaim, they would have reneged on their own pshatim. And they would have accepted Reb Chaim, and by association, Reb Moshe's pshat. Who says? Maybe they wouldn't have. How can he be so sure that they would have recanted? Look, they were big people. They could have thought of the Reb Chaim. They didn't. They must argue on the Reb Chaim. And finally, he says, not finally, but the next point he makes, is that the Ma'arit, and this is in point 23, again, want to read it inside, Vani Tamei Tamei Ekra, I will be astounded, he uses it twice to emphasize, I'll be astounded doubly over, How is it possible la'akor tshuva shlema to uproot an entire tshuva in its totality? But ma'arit and ma'arit al pi hashara based on a reckon dimyonis kazos based on an imaginary hypothesis. Vizos, and this would be true. Afilu iloya ochocha negdis lefanenu kol alkach. Even if there was no opposing proof. Ulamaisev, however, in fact, yesh lefanenu gam ochocha negdis lezeh. We have an opposing proof. Do you uyan bishure knesak dola? Look at the Sefer Shure Knesak Dola, very basic book. Misha Talmid HaMuvhag Shel HaMaariz, who was one of the foremost students of the Maariz. B'yardeh Sim Kuf Nun Dalet Ba'agol Tes Ozvav Shematik B'Pshutus Divrei Tshuvas HaMaariz Azos. He copies over these words of the Maariz Shebasim Tzadik Tes. She'eshi B'Pshitus Dein Ma'apol HaSa'ubar Mishu Mitzur Yibud Nefesh. That there is no Isser of causing an Ubar of there is no Isser of Ritzicho and killing an Ubar. And he sees no contradiction between that Chuvan Simon Tzadik Tess and the Chuvan Simon Tzadik sign. So we won't get into that tonight. But Lemaisa, if the student of the Maariz quotes the Chuvas being accurate, how could a Moshe come 400 years later and say it's a forgery? The Tzitzili Ezra is astounded. And he says, hi. What about the Rashba, which the Tzitz Eliezer quoted? Well, I'm sorry, which the Maariz quotes. The Rashba, which is not to be found, where allegedly the Rashba says that the Ramban helped to a non-Jewish woman to abort her fetus, says the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Unterman and Rav Moshe misunderstood the Maariz. Take a look at the Maariz for a moment. Turn to page 10. The Maariz says, it's in the middle of the tshuva. From the word tshuva, ten lines down. The middle of the line, it says, Uzchurani. He says, I remember, Sh'ar'isi l'ar Rashba Zal b'tshuva, I saw the Rashba in one of his responses, Sh'ahid al Ramban Zal, testified on the Ramban, Sh'nis'asikim goya achas sh'tis'aber b'schar. That he dealt with a certain non-Jewish lady that she should get pregnant for money. In other words, he was paid for his services. And I'm going to give it away now. But if you put the comma after Shetisaber Bischar, then the next line is the Maariz himself talking. And to deal with her that she should cause a pregnancy, even the Vashos ain't God's like to be murdered, etc., etc. Reb Moshe Rav Unterman didn't put a period in the middle, a comma in the middle. They learned it's one long run-on sentence. That the Ramban was dealing with a non-Jewish lady who was pregnant in order that she should be aborted. So that's not pshat. The Rashba is talking about a case of the Ramban who dealt with a non-Jewish lady that she should get pregnant. And concerning that, the Rav Maariz says, and in order to do an abortion in that case, is XYZ, whatever the Maariz goes on to say. And in fact, there is a famous tshuva in the Rashba, where he speaks about the Ramban having dealt with a non-Jewish lady and helped her to get pregnant. It's famous, I think we quoted here once before. The Ramban's brother-in-law was Rabbeinu Yoina, who wrote the Shari Tshuva. And the Ramban was a doctor, and he helped assist a non-Jewish lady to get pregnant. I don't know exactly what he did, but he helped in the process. And Rabbeinu Yonah wrote him a famous letter. Does anybody remember what he wrote him in the letter? It's brought down the Beis Yosef Shulchan Aruch as well. It says, Yashir kochacha, Yashir koyach, Shatamar bezaro shel Amalek. You're adding more Amalekites to the world. So in any event, there is such a truth in the Rashba. So it says to us, I don't understand. He's misreading the Maariz, and on the basis of that, assuming the Maariz is a forgery, the Maariz is quoting a well-known Tshuvas HaRashba, which the Rashba quotes the Ramban as having helped to get a non-Jewish lady pregnant. Okay, let's turn the page. In point 25, the Tzitz Eliezer says, listen, about Rabbi Yaakov and his Tshuva, I grant he says that it's true that the beginning of Rabbi Yaakov is true, where he speaks about a mother, woman, the mother being Chayv Misa anyway. That's very strange. But he says, whenever we find a poskim, a lashon of Yesh Tzad Gadol, or Yesh Tzad Lahakel, it doesn't mean there are five sides, and four of them are to be stringent, and only one is to be lenient. It means that the Rabbi Yaakov Emden wanted to say that there's a good and logical and possible case to be made that we can be lenient. It's just that in his case, he wasn't dealing with such a case. And that's why he didn't bother dealing with it. He's saying, but know for future reference, if you ever come to such a case, there's a logic to be permissible, that it's permissible. And everybody knows who's learned a lot of poskim that the poskim express themselves that way. They don't mean to say there's a possibility, but it's pushed off by the possibilities the other direction. No, they're saying there is a possibility. Keep it in mind. Store it for future reference. And therefore, he says, again, he brings down the Munah Shmuel, who says that there is no Isser in abortion in Midoraisa. Not again. He brings down the Munah Shmuel, who says that not only is there no Isser in abortions Midoraisa, sorry, not only is there no Isser in abortions, but it's only Midrabanan, whatever Isser there is. Not phrasing that right. Not only is there no Isser of murder by abortions, it's not even Isser Doraisa. The Rogachar, the Tzafnas Paneach, and the others who learned before said it's Isser Doraisa, just not the Isser Doraisa of Ritzicha. It's Isser Doraisa of Chavola, of Gzela, of Hutzah Zera Levatola, but not the Isser of murder. The Amunas Shmuel says it's not even an Isser of Midoraisa at all. It's only Isser Midrabanan. And therefore, Tzitz Eliezer in conclusion, in point 27, who says, L'zos mishnaseinu ubazeh lo zozam im koma. Therefore, our original statement in this doesn't move at all. And he says, it's permissible. He says, one is allowed to do an abortion up till the seventh month in a case of Tay-Sachs. He says, L'maisi, you have to be very careful. There's a Zohar which says that abortions are a terrible thing. But we're in a case where there's a terrible amount of emotional anguish involved for the mother, it's permissible to do an abortion. This is not the last word. If you turn to the page 9, you'll see from Dr. Abraham, from Nishmas Avraham, he brings down that the Tzitz Eliezer permitted. And then he brings down the Reb Moshe forbade. And then he brings down that Tzitz Eliezer came back again and permitted. And he brings down then the Lev Aryeh, I forget who Lev Aryeh is, who also said it wanted to be matir, said it's possible that it's mutter. But then, in the clincher, he brings down, everybody see the paragraph, at the end of the paragraph, which begins the letter 15, number 15. It says, V'armeli agrashaz oyer bashlita, Reb Shlomo Zalman said to me, Shaladaito, in his opinion, tzrichim lahachmir ukipsaka igros Moshe. It has to be machmir like Reb Moshe Feinstein. Now, I want to explain something here about the halachic process. Even though it's possible, from what you've seen tonight, I'm sure all of you would feel, like I feel, that Tzitz Eliezer had a lot of evidence on his side and had a lot of good ammunition refuting Reb Moshe's points. But nonetheless, it doesn't mean Reb Moshe's wrong. Because Reb Moshe, being the tremendously accomplished and giant Talmid Chacham which he is, has a sense of what is a real pshat in the Rambam, a true pshat in the Rambam, and has a sense of what could be true pshat in the Tosfos. And therefore, even if you find many people arguing Reb Moshe, it doesn't mean Reb Moshe is wrong. In other words, let's say Reb Moshe, for argument's sake, is not right about the Rambam. Let me rephrase that. Even if we say that Reb Moshe can be refuted in his interpretation of the Rambam, and even if we say Reb Moshe can be refuted in his interpretation of Tosfos and Nida, and even we said Reb Moshe can be refuted and the Ma'arit is legitimate and not a forgery. But still, Reb Moshe's opinion is Reb Moshe's opinion. And in Reb Moshe Feinstein's opinion, there is murder involved in abortion. And therefore, he holds that in Tay-Sachs is not permissible. And he holds that this is the Rambam, and he holds that this is the Tosfos and Sanhedrin. And since there is Reb Moshe Feinstein's opinion, even though we have many opinions in the other direction, which Tzitz Eliezer quotes, a lot of opinions, nonetheless remains a suffix in Hilchos Ritzicha. It's a suffix what the true approach should be in a matter which has to do with a possibility of murder. And generally, when we're faced with the possibility of the issur of murder being involved, which is one of the most stringent issurim in the Torah, we have to tread very carefully. And that's where Moshe, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, after everything was said and done, says that in his opinion, it seems that one has to be machmir like the Psak of the Igros Moshe. Now, of course, it's not our business in these shiurim to pasken and halacha l'maisa, especially in things of this great weight in Am Yisrael. But both in the bottom line, both opinions are legitimate, and this is an open question which rages till this very day, 15 and some odd years later. In the event, as I said, that the tests will be improved to the point that the Tay-Sachs can be determined, the presence of Tay-Sachs disorder can be determined earlier within the first 40 days, despite the fact that Rav Moshe is also machmir abortions in the first 40 days, then many, many, many more poskim are lenient kick in, and there will be a possibility of being much more lenient at that point in time than the present.